Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
And welcome to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. It's a new year, and so now it means it's time for you to spruce up your finances and get ready for what's coming. We have Maria Bruno. She is from Vanguard, and she is going to talk to us about some of the things you can do to get ready for 2017 and beyond. So welcome to the show.
Thanks, Miranda. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's just get right into it. What are some of the most important things that you need to do with your finances as you get ready for 2017 or any new year for that matter?
There's a lot of opportunity. You know, when we're thinking about the new year, we're thinking about new goals and resolutions and things like that. It's particularly good because you can then reflect on the prior year and see what's changed. So it's a really good time to do that. The caution that I would give is not to try and take on too much at any one given point in time. And that's probably with, you know, we could make that argument for anything in life. But when you think about the finances, first would be really to stop and think about your investing goals, whether it's saving for retirement or maybe it's a home purchase. Just go back and validate that those goals haven't changed and that they remain the same, and the time horizon, how you feel about those goals is the same. So that's the first step that anyone should take, whether they're starting to invest or whether they've been investing for a while. Just go back, recalibrate, make sure that those goals haven't changed. From there, what I would suggest is, well, how are you tracking towards those goals? For people who are still in their working years, it's typically a savings message. Am I saving enough? Am I saving appropriately in the right type of vehicles in terms of retirement accounts versus non-retirement accounts? And that's usually a good starting point.
When we're talking about saving enough, we're not just talking about putting money in a savings account, right? We're talking about investing, right?
Yes, and there's a difference between investing and savings. So investing is a long-term goal. Savings are things like emergency reserves, and every one of us needs some type of liquidity reserves. These are your cash accounts, be it a checking account or a money market account. And there's a trade-off. One is you need, all investors, all of us need some type of liquidity. The trade-off or the opportunity cost is if you have too much in short-term savings, you're really missing out on the investing part of it, which with investing is taking advantage of market appreciation. And it's a balance because as you start to invest in the markets, there is a risk, and that's where asset allocation comes into play, and that's finding the balance between stock investments and bond investments, for instance. Some investors think, particularly in choppy markets, that they're playing it safe by staying outside of the market and staying in cash, for instance. And while you may be safe from market volatility, there's a hidden risk there of inflation, and staying in cash investments either for too long or having too much of your portfolio in cash, there's a pretty big opportunity cost to that because you're not keeping up with inflation over a longer term. That's the difference between investing and savings.
Okay, so when you're trying to decide, maybe you've looked at it and you said, okay, I need to up my investing game this year. One of my goals is to increase the amount I invest or to even start investing. Where do you start with that? How do you get to that point where you can say, all right, I'm going to start investing for 2017?
You know, for starting out, it's really how much should I be investing and am I saving enough? At Vanguard, we really recommend investors think about saving 12 to 15% of their salary towards retirement. Now, that can seem like a lofty number for many of us.
Right. Yeah.
Keep
many,
in mind, yeah.
I was going to say many beginners are like, really, 15%.
Yes, I know.
Sure.
I have this message, and they, you know, I can sense the eyes rolling. Like, okay, but you know, kidding aside, for young investors who are entering the workforce, and you know, we were all there at some point in our lives. They're managing limited resources for different goals. So it could be saving for retirement. It could be the liquidity reserves. It could be paying off student debt, housing, things like that. So the reality of it is many of us have competing investing goals, but limited resources, and how do you allocate that? So absolutely, I think most planners, practitioners, most of us will say retirement is a priority, but it is a series of trade-offs, and that's okay. It's just finding that balance, and it's just making sure that you're not looking maybe too short-term and foregoing the long-term. So 12 to 15% of your salary is a watermark. That does include any type of employer contributions that you would get through a 401k, for instance. So many large employers who offer a retirement plan, a 401k plan, offer some type of company match. So it may be dollar for dollar. But really, as investors, you want to save at least up to that company match. If not, you're leaving money on the table. So that's a gimme. That's a given where you want to make sure you take advantage of that company match. From there, then, it becomes probably some decision making. And for many individuals who are starting out, and if they have a 401k, through their 401k offer, there's typically what we call an auto-enrollment feature where you're opted into the plan. And typically, the plan may set a target savings rate. And what you can also do is what's called an auto-increase. So you can increase that automatically, say 1% per year, or you can customize that. And typically, it may be into a target date fund or a balanced fund. So the nice part about that is it sets a savings rate, it increases in a disciplined way, and you're properly diversified within your asset allocation. The nice part about that is if you're a 25-year-old and you're saving 5% and your employer matches 3% or at 8%, you increase every year. By the time you're 30, for instance, you're there, and you're there in a very disciplined way. So that's one way to ease into the discipline of investing without getting that shock factor, like, wow, this is just too much, I can't do it right now.
And I think that goes back to what you're talking about when you're setting your goals for the year, when you're thinking about what you want to accomplish with your money. When you talk about, you know, how do you avoid making it too big? How do you avoid making it overwhelming? Because you want it to be something that allows you to have incremental progress, which is better than, you know, flash in the pan for like 3 months. You're like, I'm amazing. And then it just all just dies. And so,
which is basically the same thing with any of New Year's resolutions, right?
Right. Yes.
So if you tackle it too much early on, it just fizzles.
Right. And so that incremental progress, I really like how you point that out. So what happens now? Many people are looking at this year and saying there's a lot of, I'm really uncertain about what's going to happen next. There's a lot that people are looking at in terms of, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to my Social Security? What's happening to Medicare? What's happening to the stock market? There's a lot of uncertainty, as there always is whenever new things happen. So what can people do as they're looking at this coming year to say, okay, how am I going to invest in this time period?
Investing is emotional. Regardless of where you are within your investment journey, it is emotional. And part of that is managing that. And generally speaking, it's best not to panic, right? There's a lot of speculation, particularly with this year. We have a new administration. So there tends to be more uncertainty. And that's natural. It's interesting. Last night, actually, Vanguard did a webcast, and we had our chief investment officer, as well as our CEO, answer questions from our investors. And it was a live webcast. It'll be replayed on Vanguard.com shortly. But one of the questions that we asked is, what's the investor sentiment now in terms of the markets and the economy? And it's a little polling question. And about 41% of the viewers said they were optimistic. About half said they were uncertain. And very, very low percentage said they hadn't, you know, they were very worried or very concerned. I don't find that surprising. I actually found that very enriching in terms of the numbers. But the uncertainty is really what the sentiment is now, and speculative could also be another word that's used. So it's very common and very natural to have this concern. The question is, what do you do with that, and how do you react towards that? So number one, have realistic expectations around market returns. So we've been in a very favorable bull market, for instance, through 2009. That may or may not continue. We don't know how long that continue, but there will be some type of market correction at some point. So really, you need to think about the things that you can control as an investor. That is, one, how much you're saving, or if you're a retiree, for instance, how much you're spending. And the other is, how are you allocated? And you want to think globally. When you think about how the global markets and economy are structured, the United States represents about half of the global market capitalization. So when you think about how you construct your portfolio, you want to be broadly diversified as well. And you want to think about long-term as opposed to thinking reactively. We see this a lot in terms of the markets in the economy. We also see it with interest rates and the concerns about rising interest rates. So the markets will ebb and flow, but we can't predict when or how they will ebb and flow, and that's where diversification comes into play. And that's making sure that you're globally diversified, that you have the right asset allocation, the right combination of stocks, bonds, and cash for your personal goals, and then just make sure that you have a discipline in terms of understanding how much you are saving towards that goal and how you're doing. So it tries to take the emotional aspect away from it and really thinking more around long term as opposed to panicking or reacting on speculation. And that's easier said than done. I realize that as an investor for all of us.
You talk about how, you know, there's going to be a market correction at some point, and we just don't know exactly when that's going to be. So how is the best way to protect yourself during this market correction? Do you just keep on investing? Do you use kind of a dollar cost averaging strategy? Do you move your money around? Like, how do you prepare for something like that when you don't know when it's happening?
Yes, and that's a very valid question. And we saw that, say, for instance, in 2008, when we went through a very significant market correction. We've got some lessons learned there. And the markets have rebounded substantially since 2009. So if you think about an investor during that era, if they had panicked and sold out of the market altogether and stayed in the sidelines, as we had talked about earlier, in cash, they would have missed this sustained bull market that had happened since then. So the key is to make sure that you are properly diversified. And I hate to keep using that word again, but it is important to make sure that you are properly diversified and making sure that your portfolio, in terms of the holdings, are aligned with what your long-term goal may be, for instance. If you have a short-term goal, on the other hand, then you need to be wary in terms of how much you have in stocks, because that's where the market volatility or the market risk comes into play. So for long-term horizons, and for those of us who are investing for retirement, we have long-term horizons, and that's where equities play a role because they offer long-term growth and inflation protection over the long term. With that will come market volatility. We as investors have to be comfortable with that. The key, though, is to make sure that you don't have too much of your investment portfolio concentrated in one particular part of the market. So diversification does not ensure against losses. What it does do is it helps mitigate the losses that any one particular part of the market may have at one given point in time. Because the markets are unpredictable, it is prudent to be invested across markets so that you're enjoying up markets and potentially some down markets over time. So that's where, when you think about investing, you think about diversification, that's where the importance is to help insulate against different types of market volatility, because it will happen. We've seen it. It'll continue to happen. But we don't know when, and we don't know how long any type of market correction can be. If you think about the historical, you know, markets over the long, long term, and we think about what our forecast could be, you know, there's a lot of projections. Economists make projections. We have our own projections as well. It's very risky to make projections based upon a one-year outlook. It's very short-sighted, and there's a lot of dispersion around that. So when you think about investing, you want to think, we at Vanguard actually think 10 years or more in terms of prudent expectations of market returns. And they are. They're moderated based upon the current market conditions and current valuations. So as investors, you know, it doesn't make sense it's very dangerous, actually, to make projections based upon long-term historical return averages, because we know at this point that markets are highly valued. We want to be a little bit more moderated when you think about balanced returns and stocks and bonds. Yields are very low right now. So you want to be prudent when you're making any type of market projections to make sure that you're not making projections on highly artificial or high return expectations. If you think about where we are today in terms of market valuations, from 2009 to today, we've been in one of the longest bull markets in history. So we want to be prudent in terms of what our expectations are going forward and be prepared that there could be some market volatility, and making sure that your asset allocation is appropriately constructed based upon your goals. So if you think about this bull market that I've just mentioned, and you think about an investor, for instance, that may have set a target equity allocation of 60%. If that investor had not rebalanced, that allocation could be much higher, maybe towards 70%. So their risk profile may not be aligned with what they had intended. So it's always important to go back and validate your asset allocation and rebalance if your target asset allocation, for instance, is off by more than 5%. So that's going back and selling areas of the market where you may be overweighted and rebalancing into the underweighted areas.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I really like how you point out, you know, just if you look at, you know, a short-term chart of, you know, how stocks are performing, it's really scary because you just have all these ups and downs all the time. And it's kind of freaky. But if you look at it from the long term, the general trend line just kind of goes, you know, a nice, steady kind of slope upward, which kind of is helpful.
Yeah, and that's why when you think about asset allocation, if you break it apart and look at any type of market, yes, it's highly cyclical and it's very random. And you may see an asset class that was a top performer in 1 year drop to the bottom in the following year. So smaller emerging type countries, for instance, may offer higher return potential, but there's more risk that goes along with that. That doesn't necessarily mean that you should stay out of that market altogether, but it certainly doesn't mean that you should put all your eggs in one basket either, because you're overexposing yourself to those risks. So the key is to have exposure or access to all different parts of the market in a prudent way, so that you are experiencing all these different types of random patterns as an investor. And when you put it all together in terms of asset allocation, it's much smoother over the long term.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Just before we go, if there was one thing that you would tell someone to do for this coming year, as far as, you know, what's the one thing you think that they should consider doing for their finances this coming year?
The one message, and it's really evergreen, is just really focusing on the things that you as an investor can control. Because again, we can, as we discussed, you can't control the volatility or the timing of the markets, but what you can control is how are you investing or how are you spending. Focus on cost. Make sure that you understand how you're investing and the costs associated with that, and keep costs low. And then just go back and just recalibrate to that and just make sure that, you know, you're marching towards that goal in an effective way. It is a balancing act. It's not all or nothing, but small steps and disciplined steps really form the foundation for long-term success.
Okay, thank you so much, Maria Bruno from Vanguard. And we'll go ahead and move into the roundtable portion of our show. Welcome to the panel portion of the Money Tree podcast. Today we have a full crew hailing from Israel. We've got Doug Goldstein. How are you doing today, Doug?
I'm doing excellent, Miranda. Great to hear from you. And I'm so happy we're all together for the new year.
I know, right? Super great.
And we should make like a pledge for the new year. I just can't decide what, you know, the four of us should do.
I don't know. Be awesome.
Be awesome.
We'll follow in your footsteps.
We're already doing that.
Okay. Well, apparently, you know, our rankings keep moving up in iTunes. So thank you to you listeners. You make that happen. Thank you, listeners. All right. Also, we've got Joe Salcihi from Stacking Benjamins.
Miranda!
Whoa!
I'm so excited to be here, ready to make sure that I can derail this conversation every chance I get.
Awesome. We need more of that in life.
Perfect.
And hailing from the desert is Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart. How are you today?
I'm great, Miranda. How are you?
I am doing okay.
How much snow is there in Idaho right now?
Just as much as there was before. We ended up with close to 2 feet of snow when all was said and done. And now it's just been sitting there freezing over because it's been cold. It just sits there, cold and crunchy.
Is the snow supposed to do something? Is it supposed to dance instead of just sit there?
It would be nice if we had a January thaw and it warmed up and melted.
It would be nice. It would be nice for you to live in Florida, too.
No, that's a little much. Right. I could move back to, you know, like northern Arizona or southern Utah or something where you still have seasons, but you don't freeze your butt off all the time.
Right.
Anyway, let's move on, shall we? Let's talk about the new year and some investing for the new year. And I thought it'd be fun to ask you guys, first of all, what are your own financial goals for the new year? What are you guys working on? So let's start with you, Joe. What are you working on this year?
You know, the name of the game for me, Miranda, is automation. On the other show that I do, Stacking Benjamins, we have a Friday FinTech segment. And I've heard so many great FinTech people, and I get done with these interviews and I think, man, that's a cool idea. And then, like a lot of times when I was a financial planner, like people would go, yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah, I already know that. Like they're always looking for the new thing, but they're not implementing any of the old really good stuff. I thought about, you know, if I implemented just a few of these things, I could seriously do a better job of automating. So automation is the name of 2017. And I know, you know, some people might be saying, well, that's not a super long goal. You do that over a weekend. But I know that it's not going to work for me right away. Like a budget doesn't always work right away. So it's going to be a series of tweaking and testing and tweaking and testing until I get things automated in the way that works best for me.
And I really like that approach because I'm not a big fan of like making a huge goal or making a ton of goals. I'm a big fan of like finding the thing that is going to most help your finances in the long run and tweaking it and making it work right for you. And so I think that's a really great approach. So gold star.
Thanks, Mom. Somebody said to me recently, they said, you know, everybody talks about making better financial decisions. Shouldn't it be making no financial decisions? And they're all making themselves really well, right? All the decisions have already been made and they're making themselves awesomely without me having to be involved. And then I can focus on top line, bringing in income, while once the money comes into my grasp, it actually does the thing it's supposed to do without me having to worry about it at all. That's the goal.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I am with you 100%. All right. So what about you, Linda? What's your big focus for this year?
Well, I'd say from a money perspective, I would be looking at reviewing and rebalancing. So what's going on in the portfolio, what's worked, what hasn't worked, and just doing some tweaks. I'm also looking from a lifestyle perspective. What do I want to do? What kind of travel do I want to do? What conferences do I want to go to? Those kinds of things. Where do I want to be spending more time? And then from a business perspective, I have a goal to be doing more video this year. I have not been doing a ton of video. I've been doing, of course, my podcast. But I think the time has come to move into more of the video realm. So I'll plan to do that this year.
That is really cool. I would like to do more video as well. Man, you guys are giving me all sorts of great ideas for what's next. Awesome. All right. And what about you, Doug? What is your big money goal or goals? What are you planning to do with your money for this year?
My goal, and I said already, was I'm going to try to increase the savings that I do by 10%. So I want to do 10% more than I did last year. Last year was a pretty good year, so we're going to try and up it again. And I'm just talking about savings that I take out of my work and I plug it into my personal portfolio, because it seems to me as though, just like we talk a lot about dividend growth stocks, you know, companies that whose dividend is growing every year, and that seems to be a good idea. I kind of feel like I am my own company, and my company is a financial advisory company, but I take dividends out of that company, and why not look for dividend growth in my own company? So that's a financial goal that I'm looking to do. And I'm also pretty excited that I'll be teaching at the MBA level this year, personal finance. And I have like a smaller goal, which Miranda, is I want to get you to vote Republican this year. So I figure that'll be easy, you know?
Oh, good luck with that. Yeah, that's going to really happen. Yeah, sure. You just keep on working on that, buddy.
If you set goals, you achieve them, right? Isn't that what it's all about?
Aim high.
She'll work on that right after she gets back from the march, right, Miranda?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like everybody's got some really great goals for the coming year and a lot of exciting things happening and people going to be learning from Doug. In addition to learning his sweet, sweet money management skills, they're going to be learning his business skills at the MBA level. So that's cool.
But you haven't told us yours.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. So last year, I didn't set any resolutions, and instead I just decided to try and figure out what I wanted from life and figure out how to get back on track with my life after it fell to pieces. And so I spent a year doing that, and it was super great. So I decided that this year, instead of setting like resolutions, I'd go ahead and pick a word to help me focus my efforts this year. And so I picked grow, and that includes growing my business, which kind of I haven't really worked on with any sort of seriousness for the last 2 or 3 years. It's been kind of on autopilot and it's been doing okay, but I think it could do a lot better. So I'm looking to grow in a lot of ways. And as far as money goes, I'm hoping to grow my business.
Awesome.
So let's move on to the next question. So we've talked about this a little bit. Is it possible to make your goals too big? What happens when you get to the point where it's a little unrealistic? Is that, you know, we talked about that a little bit with Maria about, you know, people saying, oh, well, I've got to immediately start investing this much in my retirement account. And it may not be realistic. So What are your thoughts on that idea? Is it possible to make a goal too big, or is it more an issue of, are you trying to do too much in too short a time? And let's go ahead, Linda, and start with you.
Well, I don't think that the problem is usually people have too big of a goal. I think big goals are good, to answer your question. I actually got really interested in this whole idea about setting goals and mindset when I was really young and started reading some different books about mindset and, you know, the magic of thinking big and things like that. So really fun books are out there if you want to pursue that. But I think that setting big goals is good. I don't think that most people save too much. I think that sometimes we get off track and we get, you know, money that was going to be allocated one place gets allocated somewhere else. And, you know, the decision comes up to buy a new car or something else. And so that money that was going into the retirement plan doesn't get there. So I would say it would be good if people could have bigger goals, like Doug having the 10% extra savings this year is a great goal for a lot of people. And I would encourage people to think like that.
Okay. And what about you, Doug? What are your kind of feelings on setting goals and making them kind of realistic and manageable?
Yeah. See, I'm not like a football coach where I can tell people go, 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 because I'm just not that personality. I'm kind of like a middle-aged financial guy. But I read books about it. In fact, I just read Grant Cardone's book about 10xing and, you know, thinking 10x. And like a million years ago, I read James Collins and his book Built to Last, where he talks about a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal. And I got to tell you, I think this is the way to go, because pretty much everyone I know thinks really small. And frankly, it's funny that we're talking about this. And I said, I'm looking at a 10% increase in the amount I'm going to save. Honestly, I was a little bit embarrassed to say that. I thought, maybe I should have said I'm looking to save five times the amount I saved last year. I really do think that having bigger goals can be inspiring and make you try bigger. And it's one thing, like sort of the one main point, and I'll save you the time of reading Grant Cardone's book, although it's a good book, you should read it. The one main point he said is, if you set a goal that's 10% higher than what you're doing, and let's say you miss your goal, so maybe you only do 5% more, okay, so you did 5% more. But if you set a goal that's 10 times what you might otherwise do and you miss your goal, so maybe you only did 6 times what you wanted to do. You did so much more by aiming higher. So I'm a huge fan of making BHAGs, big, hairy, audacious goals that are just huge, and go for it. And, you know, if you don't make it, you didn't make it. But generally, people aren't thinking big enough. And that's really a tragedy, I think.
Yeah, I like this idea of thinking big. I'm just wondering if maybe we also need to kind of be realistic about the time frame it's going to be accomplished in. I like the idea of setting like a big hairy goal and then like working on it all year, not necessarily being like, I have to have it done in 2 months. So I kind of like the idea of like incrementalizing it and making it something that you can accomplish in pieces so that you're at least making some forward progress and you don't feel like a failure as you go along, I guess.
You mean like setting milestones?
Yeah, yeah. So let's get your thoughts on this, Joe.
Well, Doug stole my thunder, and I'm sure he knew what I had written here in front of me, so I'm very disappointed, Doug, for taking the words. Yeah, but you know, I was just going to put it just a slightly different way, which is that Michelangelo even said this, is that the problem with goals is not setting your goals too small and crushing them. I'm sure Michelangelo didn't say the words crushing them, but we should set our goals way big, and then if we don't meet them, we still exceed those little tiny goals. So that's my thought. Same as Doug. I should have said, Doug is correct.
Thank you. Nice.
I'm going to play that for my wife a little later.
Doug is right.
Yeah, Doug owes me $20 now.
I think that's a really good point, too.
Can I actually ask a question on what Joe said, which is the milestones thing? You know, clients often think that, you know, financial planning, investment clients, you know, we talk about returns and they assume, you know, if they say, well, if it makes X percent, it's got to go up a certain, you know, a certain amount every month. And I always tell them that's not the way the market works. I also don't think that's the way life really works. It's not that orderly. And I think one of the problems with setting milestones is it doesn't really happen. It's unrealistic because nothing really goes so
neatly.
Oh, man.
Can we get into this?
I don't know.
Do it.
Because I disagree.
This is very important stuff. If you're going to set a goal, you got to figure out how to do this if you're going to set your money goals. So get into it.
I agree with plans to get there, but it's just not like, fine, if you're going to save $100 a week, great, or whatever your savings are going to be. But life just isn't that neat.
Yeah, but
maybe yours is, Joe.
No, I totally agree with it, which is why I like milestones, because when life isn't neat and the goal is just killing you, instead of throwing it away, now you can revise the goal. Because here's what we would do in our financial planning. This is the piece of financial planning that I really loved when I was a financial planner, which was people would come into my office. And before I did this, by the way, they would want to talk about what happened in the market and all these things that are out of their control that there's nothing they can do, right? If we first started off the meeting by looking at the milestone toward the goal, because, you know, for a lot of these people, financial independence was a long ways away. So we would set these markers, you know, and if we're ahead of the marker, well, then we have one series of decisions that we make, but we're not focusing on why we're ahead of the marker. Was it the market? Was it, who cares what it was? That's in the past. What are we going to do going forward? If we're behind the marker, well, then we have a whole different set of actions. So if we're behind, we talk about, you know, should we save more money? Are there things in the budget we can cut the next 6 months so that we can make up what we lost? If we're ahead of the game, well, then maybe, you know, there was this trip that they wanted to take and they didn't think that they could afford it. But now maybe we can slow down saving a little bit and take that trip and enjoy life a little bit today. So I love the idea of milestones because it let us, you know, what's that? Eat the elephant a little piece at a time.
Wow. Well, elephants are not kosher, so I would never eat one. So I'm totally not on the same planet with you, man. I'm sorry.
I agree with you, Joe. I'm all about the milestones and doing it a little bit at a time.
Come on, Linda. Be on my side, Linda.
Well, I really liked what Joe said. I thought it made a lot of sense. And
sorry, Doug, your wife. You're not going to be able to tell your wife now.
You just should have quit while you were ahead, Doug. That's all I can say. You know, you had it with Doug is right. And
that's right.
Guys, there are things you can control and things you can't control. That's the problem. Like, if you can control how much you save, right? You can control how much you spend. You can't control the market. So if your milestone is based on, I expect my portfolio to go up 5% by the middle of the year, it's totally unrealistic.
Well, that I agree with. I think that's the heart of the question I asked is, how do you set these realistic goals? And goals that you can control. So instead of saying, well, I want to grow X amount in the market this year, your goal should actually reflect that I want to invest X amount of my money. And that way, it's something that was firmly within your control rather than something that's based on the market.
Yeah, what Miranda said, Joe.
So I think milestones are good, but you have to make sure you're discriminating what kind of financial milestones I'm setting, and do they make sense, and are they realistic?
Right. Right. And by the way, going up 5% might be a realistic number between what you're putting in and what your market expectation is. And I understand the market's not going to deliver that. But if the market doesn't deliver that, we can sit back and say, well, I shouldn't have had a milestone. Or we can say, what can I change in my life about the things that I can control, like saving more money, cutting the budget, to make up for the fact that I'm behind on that milestone? There's all kinds of things that we can do. And then you focus yourself. You focus your actions on meeting these numbers instead of just throwing a dart out there into the atmosphere.
Well, you look at it this way, Doug. If somebody is close to retirement, then they're probably really focused on that milestone. So they want to put more and do everything they can to put more away right now so that they can retire and reach that goal. Let's say it's at age 65. So they're really going to focus on that and really focus on putting more in and making that goal, right?
I'm just wondering, let's say that you had a goal that to grow your portfolio by 5% this year and the market tanks. Are you going to say, oh my gosh, we can't go on vacation and we can't eat and, you know, the kids don't get braces because we got to put more money into savings in order to build our net worth by 5%?
No.
Know what you mean by
no.
So that's a terrible goal. You can't say I'm going to grow my portfolio amount is going to grow by 5%. You've got to put it in terms of I'm going to put X amount into my portfolio.
Yes, and you and I are saying the same
thing.
No,
I think you can set a number, but I think that why would you sit and say, well, you know what, I'm going to live on rice and beans. I mean, at some point you say, I've got to move the marker. I have to move the milestone. But look at what we did. We just talked about three different things, all of which are in your control that you can do. You can move the marker, you can save more, you can save less. All those things are things that you can control. Or you can just have no marker, which is what it sounds like you're talking about, which is crazy to me. Why wouldn't
I have a savings marker? I want to save X number of dollars a year. Just do that. Figure out the amount you have to save and you'll be fine.
Yeah, but I have a spot where I have to get financial independence, right? I have a spot that I know that I need my portfolio to be to offer me financial independence. Why wouldn't I set that in and then set even markers all the way down the mountain to where I am now and then say, okay, Well, it stormed yesterday, so I got to make a little up. Or, you know what, the top of the mountain? Looks like I'm not going to make it there. Maybe I'll go to this, you know, overlook instead.
That is such a man thing to say.
You're Why, thank you.
Goal-oriented, if you can, you know, count it. Right?
Okay, so let's move on here. I think we've beat this dead horse. Let's move on. So I think one of the things that we talked about a little bit was the emphasis on savings versus investment accounts. So do you think that people divide these too much? Do you think there's too much of an emphasis on putting money in the saving because it's safe and then kind of neglecting the investing? How do you guys like view that? Let's start this time with you, Joe. What do you think?
Well, I think Doug's wrong.
Whatever it is, Doug is wrong. I think it's a milestone.
I just have to log into Joe's computer to see what he's about to say, and then I'm going to say it first.
I actually think saving and investing, I think that's semantics. I think that when you're building your emergency fund, that is investing. That's investing in the fact that you need this cash money. That's investing in the short term. Investing in a cash reserve is investing in the short term. Investing otherwise is investing in the long term. So I think it's a semantical thing.
Oh, I disagree.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay. All right. Go, Linda, go.
The only person I haven't disagreed with yet.
Go, Linda, go.
Well, I think I interpreted the question as, you know, savings versus investing, because if you're saving, you're in a savings account, which by definition is probably that you're not invested in something that's going to compound at a higher rate. So you're stuck in something that might be yielding 0.5%, maybe 1% if you're lucky. And that is never going to get people to their goal. Versus investing is, to me, saying that you're in the market, you have the potential to earn the market averages, which, you know, somewhere between 8-10% annually over the long term. And that is going to get you to the higher compounding rates. It's going to build your wealth and get you to the goals. So the higher rate's going to get you to your goals and is going to get you, you know, compounding and get you to reach your retirement numbers, versus if you're stuck in a 1% account, you know, it's going to take 72 years to double and you're never going to reach your goal. So that's, I look at very different definitions of saving and investing. That's why I disagree.
Well, once, and now Linda's wrong. So there we go.
Go for it.
And we need to add the official disclaimer that the Money Tree podcast officially thinks and says that past performance is no guarantee of future returns. And even whatever Linda said about 8-10% obviously is not a guarantee. And she said over the very long term average. So just wanted to throw that one in for you.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Linda. I still think that I totally get it. And for a lot of people, they have to make that distinction. I just think if you're investing in your short-term needs, you're going to go into a savings account. It's just another one of the choices that are out there. If you're investing long-term, there's no, even if I'm saving long-term, if I'm saving into a savings account long-term, well, like you said, I'm not keeping up. So there's an appropriate investment for each time frame, which is why in my head, I just think of it all as investing into the appropriate bucket. I think we're saying the same thing.
Okay. We'll be on the same side. Let's go against Doug.
That's right. It was way more fun to go against Doug.
Right. But I was just going to say, I like the idea of like going educating people to let them see that investing should be part of their long-term saving strategy. So what do you think, Doug? Where are you at?
I think that we talk about this stuff and normal people don't see a difference. Investing, saving, stocks, bonds, mutual, it's all the same.
And we call them smart people. Those are smart people.
The bottom line is everyone should have an emergency fund. And then everything else you have is part of your overall asset allocation. If you choose to put it into a 0% bank account, then you have a bigger asset allocation to cash. That's part of, maybe you're using cash as a strategic asset because you're concerned about volatility in the market. But it's part of the game. So I just don't use the term savings account if money's in your brokerage account or your investment account, because it's part of your long-term plan. But you should absolutely, and now's a good time because we're kind of doing this whole New Year's thing, think about what your asset allocation is and adjust it to what you want it to be so it doesn't just sort of randomly get set up.
I don't know how he did it, Miranda, but Doug just became brilliant again.
I know, right? That's amazing. So let's really quickly, because we are running out of time, but I would really love to know, what are you guys most worried about for the new year and what are you most excited about? Let's start with you again, Doug. Go.
I'll tell you something that Linda has been saying on the show for a long time, because she likes to talk about cycles, has been about the bond market has been in a nice run for decades, and that she feels that may be turning around now. And the real problem is, and the thing that I regularly worry about is, most of the clients that I work with are people who are older, they're retired or near retirement, and they just need fixed income, and they don't want a lot of risk, and they don't like the idea of having a lot of money in the stock market. And at this stage, who knows what's going to happen with interest rates, but it continues to be difficult to get income off a portfolio. So we really have to spend a lot of time developing strategies, which would be much nicer if we could just get a better income off our portfolio. So that's something I think that we've been spending a lot of time on it over the past few years. And I think it's going to get even harder as we go forward, because if people buy bonds and interest rates go up, they're going to find themselves underwater. Oh, and I'm excited. Can I get someone I'm excited about?
Yes.
I'm excited about another awesome year with the Money Tree Investment Podcast. Love you guys.
Yeah, I love you,
right,
man.
Awesome. Okay. And what about you, Linda? What are you worried about and what are you excited about this year?
Well, in regards to the markets, I guess the one thing that worries me is probably the banks in Europe. The Italian banks have been teetering on the edge. Deutsche Bank is having some issues. I'm watching those closely. That makes me nervous because the EU has said they're not going to bail them out. And so we could have some really interesting things happening over in Europe that, you know, with their whole banking system. So that's going to be something to watch. And what am I excited about? I'm excited about the prospect of perhaps lower taxes. So if that happens in the U.S., I think that would be a good thing, not only for people personally, but also for corporations and profitability in the market, and could help our stock market.
Okay. And we're just going to skate right over that and go to Joe.
I was waiting for you to say something, Randy.
We are just going to go right to Joe. Joe, what are you most worried about and most excited about this year?
I thought you were just about to say, we're going to skate right past Joe because he's talked enough today.
She's signing up for the Republican Party right now.
You know, that's right.
Come on, Joe. Go, Joe, go.
You know, Doug's concerned about the bond market. I totally agree with Doug and Linda there. I'm also concerned about banks, especially the Deutsche Bank stuff that Linda referred to. But just the stock market in general, this has been one of the longest runs we've ever had in the stock market. So, but you know, I'm always worried the other shoe's going to drop, whether the upswing lasts another day, another week, whatever. I'm always worried about what's my downside protection in my portfolio. And that's on my mind right now. I'm most excited about the fact that more people are listening to podcasts. I just saw some data that shows that so many more people are listening to podcasts, and it's really exciting. So it's a great time for radio on demand. And I think there's a lot of great stuff to choose from. So I'm glad people chose us. But that's what I'm excited about for this year.
Miranda, what are you excited about?
I'm just excited about moving forward with my life now that I've figured a few things out. Not everything, but we're trying. And so I'm just excited about moving forward and getting things done. So that's exciting.
And what are you worried about?
Well, like most of you guys, I am a little bit worried about what I see as trends in the financial markets. So, you know, I'm most concerned about double checking my asset allocation, Doug, and making sure I'm on top of where I want to be and making sure I'm prepared for any sort of crash. The good news is since I'm an indexer and since I'm all about the long term, I don't need to make a huge bit of difference. But I do think that it is something to think about. Are you prepared for the next financial crisis? And that's something you need to think about.
Yep. Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Amen.
All right. So let's wrap it up here real quick and let's go around the circle, around the panel, and find out what is happening in your neighborhood. So let's start with you, Linda. What's happening at Be Wealthy and Smart?
At Be Wealthy and Smart podcast, we are working on, or we have published, the 11 financial moves to make in 2017. So just some things to think about and to focus on and to look at in your portfolio and your finances to have a successful 2017 and beyond.
Awesome. And what about you, Joe? What's happening over at Stacking Benjamins?
You know, in our Facebook group, we have just debuted a new series that's going to last all of 2017 and maybe longer, called How to Be Better At. And we kicked it off last week with How to Be Better At Saving Money, because we can all be better at that. But throughout the year, we're going to, in our Facebook group, have these webinar discussions where we teach everybody a 101, a 201, and a 301 idea to help you get on the road to being better at different areas of your financial life. And that's what we're doing outside the podcast. So, and then the podcast is just every Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
All right. Very cool. And what about you, Doug? What is happening at Rich as a King or Goldstein on Gelt? One or the other or both?
Well, I'm actually going to be signing up to be teaching one of the how to be better at. The course I'll be teaching is how to be better at being Joe.
I thought you were going to say how to be better at milestones.
So anyone who wants to know that can contact me. No, actually, one of the areas that we're really dealing with, and it's kind of sad because you guys are all happy, and I'm noticing it as people are getting older, is a lot of people I'm talking to are dealing with their parents who are dealing with dementia and having trouble and how it affects their financial situation. And a while ago, I gave a talk about this, about letting go of financial responsibility and passing it on to the next generation. And so we actually put up at our corporate website a video about letting go of financial responsibility that's really meant for people who are beginning to think that maybe they're having a little trouble, or adults whose parents are having trouble controlling it, which is at our website. I'll just give you the link. It's at profile-financial.com/letting-go. Letting go, as in letting go of responsibility. That's what's going on here. Sorry, it was a little bit of less fun than you guys' stuff.
I like it, though. It sounds great. And then over at adulting.tv, we have been doing a few more financial things at the beginning of the year in response to listener questions and interest in financial issues. And coming up in one of our soon-to-be-released episodes, we will actually be talking about what you need to do to get your money ready for the next financial apocalypse. So go ahead and head over there and have a listen if you want to know what to do with your money when things go south, as apparently we are worried that's going to happen. And at plantingmoneyseeds.com, started writing again, got some stuff up there about investments you need to make in yourself. And we'll be writing a little bit more as well about what to do when your health insurance sucks. So, which we all have that problem right now. So come on over and have a look. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Check us out at moneytreepodcast.com, where you can see all of our past episodes, get access to resources, and don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play. And until next time, remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.